Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. Tonight, I am joined by Sue Kay, a fellow Star Trek podcaster. Sue, thank you for joining me.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you on. Could you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I have been a Star Trek fan and a Picard Crusher shipper since 1987. It's true. And I have seen every episode of Star Trek. I love it to death. Favorite show of all time, for sure. And I am one of the co-hosts of the podcast Women at Warp, where we do a feminist analysis of Star Trek. So we talk about women's issues as well as issues of race and sexuality and gender identity and et cetera, et cetera. Like anything that falls under that veil of feminism we talk about, but also the fact that you have four feminists talking about Star Trek basically turns any conversation we have into a feminist conversation about Star Trek. So I've just said feminism a lot, and a bunch of people probably turned off your podcast.
Well, you know, you're probably right, but I didn't want them to listen anyway. So take that. Now, this random Trek here does not come at Star Trek from a feminist viewpoint, not because I'm against it. It's just because it's not my thing. But I am excited to talk to you, and this may shock you, Sue. But it is super easy to find dudes to talk to about Star Trek with. It is a little harder to find non-dudes to talk to about Star Trek. So whenever possible, I like to...
I think that's true.
Oh, well...
I don't know about that.
It could be... maybe it's just my limited circles that I'm looking at. Everyone... Well, here's... Let me amend that. It is easier to find guys to talk about Star Trek because I love my listeners... Thank you for listening, everyone. But I have noticed that folks who listen, the ones who listen and say, hey, Scott, I should be on your podcast, 98% of those people who self-volunteer are guys, which is, I don't know what that says, but I'm excited.
Yeah, we could get into the discussions about that, but probably not on the air. But I can put you in touch with some Star Trek podcasting non-dudes.
I would love it. I want to part of I would love it. Because obviously I'm a white dude. I mean, that's not obvious, but if you Google my name, it's obvious that I'm a white dude. And so I like getting a different viewpoint than my own. Not that every white I know now I can people are opening their email and saying, not all white guys have viewed the same things in the same way. I know people, but it's nice to just get a completely different viewpoint, which is why I like Women at Warp so much, is because it gets me thinking about Star Trek, something that I am so familiar with, in a very different way. And that's why it's so exciting to talk to people.
Oh, well, thank you. And I actually think you should give yourself a little bit more credit, because I listened to your episode covering the Inner Light recently, and not a lot of people talk about how problematic that episode is, and you guys did not shy away from that. There are some big consent issues in that episode.
Yes, that is a great episode, but also a troubling episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, before we jump into the episode that we're going to talk about, which is Emergence, which is a season 7 TNG episode. This is like the second to last episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, maybe the third to last, depending on how you count all good things. Also,
it's one episode.
I don't know if I would call it great, but it is an episode of TNG. We could talk about that. Let's talk about Star Trek in general.
Okay.
Now, I know, obviously, you're a Star Trek fan. You love Star Trek. I'm going to make you pick your favorite child from the Star Trek series and tell me which one is your favorite, bar none.
TNG.
Oh, look, you didn't even have to hesitate.
Please, no.
So what about TNG makes it your favorite?
There's a huge nostalgia factor for me. It is absolutely the one I grew up with. But there's... There's something that, like, as cheesy and campy and, like, primary colored as it can be sometimes, it just – I buy into it. It makes me happy. And this was – I know it is a product of the time it was made, just like all series are. But it was made at a time that I think that we as a culture were a lot more optimistic. And I think that comes across in these episodes. Like, you very rarely leave a TNG episode – feeling like heavy, which happens a lot in Deep Space Nine. I'm not saying it's not good, it's great, but it's also, it's a lot heavier.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as TNG will make you think, just like TOS will, it doesn't leave you on a downer, right? And the episodic nature of it also means that you can, it's great for randomization, which is, your deal. You can pop in any episode of TNG, and it might not be the best episode of Star Trek, but it will not be the worst episode of Star Trek.
That is true. I think we have to go to the original series for the worst episodes of Star Trek, period. Or maybe, I forget Enterprise. So perhaps Enterprise has that.
There's a reason.
that distinction.
There is some very good Enterprise, but there's also some very bad Enterprise.
Yes, Enterprise is what I like to call uneven.
Yes.
And not my favorite series. In fact, my least favorite series. Well documented that I think it is the least best, as I say now, because I get Enterprise people upset when I say it's bad. So it's not bad. It's just not as good as the rest of them. But if you had to pick, if you had to rank, let's rank Star Trek series in order. So obviously, TNG, number one for you. For me, I would put Deep Space Nine as number one. But if I was going nostalgia, obviously, for me, TNG also would be number one. But I'm going kind of quality of TV show. So number one, DS9, me. So what would be your number two slot?
It is really difficult for me to choose between Deep Space Nine and Voyager. And
it could be a tie. Doesn't have to be scientific.
It might just be a tie. If there can't be ties, I think that Voyager would edge out Deep Space Nine for the sole reason that so many of your scientists are women. And this was Voyager was airing at a time in my life when, you know, women leave STEM fields in school because they're discouraged from doing well in them. And I have said it on my show a couple of times, but I think that as subconscious as it was, going home and seeing Janeway and Seven and B'Elanna and even sometimes Kes work out these scientific problems together, running circles around the men in that conference room, is the reason why I have a degree in chaotic dynamics.
I don't even know what chaotic dynamics are. Let's talk about chaotic dynamics for a second. What are they?
A field of theoretical mathematics.
Ah, all right. Is it like chaos theory? Like what's-his-face, Jeff Goldblum's character in Jurassic Park?
Actually, yes, quite a bit.
Excellent. I have read James Gleick wrote a book called Chaos, and I read that. Mm-hmm. That's the only relevant thing I can share on that. So for me, I think second would be TNG. Now, Voyager, I will say that when it first came out, I was not a big fan of Voyager. I was younger, so I will say that I had trouble with Captain Janeway. Although now that I've revisited it, she is amongst my favorite captains. So I have completely changed my thinking on Janeway. And I have said numerous times that Janeway really is not the problem for me with Voyager, because she's an awesome character, so how could she be a problem? But so many other characters on Voyager I find super annoying. Specifically, Neelix. Mm-hmm. Can't stand Neelix. Tom Paris, don't care for him. And Harry Kim.
Poor Harry.
He annoys me to no end.
Which is why, sad, because Garrett is a lovely person.
No, I'm sure the actor, I can separate the actor from the role, so I'm sure he's a great guy, but, and much like Chakotay, like, I like Chakotay the character, but I feel like the writers kind of let everybody down with Chakotay, with his, you know, his dream speak and his vague Native Americanisms, or generic, I should say. They weren't vague, they were in your face and super generic.
And super made up.
Exactly. Why not pick an actual...
No, you know this story, right?
I don't know if I know the story.
They hired a consultant to write for Chakotay, and mm-hmm. he was... Or to advise for Chakotay and the Native American indigenous stuff, culture, that they were going to bring into this character. And the guy turned out to be a fraud. He was literally making everything up.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
It explains so much. So they tried to do the right thing, and they got screwed over.
Yep.
Well, that's a shame. Producers out there, double check your indigenous people experts, is what we learned from that. But I do like Chakotay as just the, so that makes sense, because I feel like he's a good character, but he's let down by the fact that it's all made up stuff, that there is a rich culture they could have used and showcased, but they didn't. That's my treatise on Voyager. But overall, it does have a lot of, so I like B'Elanna, I like, you know, Captain Janeway, Seven of Nine, the Doctor, a lot of good characters on Voyager.
Absolutely. The Doctor is also fantastic.
Yes, and he plays the character, he's the Spock character, basically, the Spock/Data character, with a spin. But it's one
with
of my
emotions.
Yes, so many, so many emotions. And I guess he's kind of like Odo, that kind of role in so Deep Space Nine analog would be Odo, I suppose. But
yeah, I think so.
Far field here, and we should probably talk about TNG. So we'll drop our rankings because you know we like everything. And go on to talking about TNG specifically. Now, you mentioned earlier in your intro that you are a Picard crusher shipper. And now, yes. I don't know if everyone who's listening is familiar with the concept of shipping. So if you could explain that.
Well, shipping, it's short for like relationshipping, mm-hmm. basically. It means that I believe these two characters should be together for the rest of time.
Now, I think it is an interesting dynamic because they kind of have there's a clear attraction there, but it's complicated, right? Because Captain Picard is basically responsible for her husband's death. And then Wesley's around.
There is some question to how responsible he is. Right? Well, no, seriously, true. Because every story you get of what actually happened on the Stargazer is different. Even like in the books, whenever they discuss it, it's not clear. And we know he was in command, but we also know that that's the life you sign up for when you join Starfleet, that things could happen.
That is true. Although he if you are in command, you are responsible for the your crew. So perhaps,
but there's a difference between like I'm in command and somebody dies on an away mission, and I'm in command and I ordered that person to jump off a cliff.
That is true.
You know, there's some degrees of separation
because
there.
I like Dr. Crusher. Yeah, but so that's an issue. Captain Picard and relationships is interesting. And I think we should talk about this because Captain Picard is such an interesting character, and he is in many ways quite distant from people, but yet he has these, you know, you feel that his crew members respect him and have deep affection for him, but he doesn't want to cross that kind of professional line, right? So he keeps them at arm's length. And I often say that I would, if I had to pick a captain on whose ship I'd want to serve, I'd probably pick Captain Janeway because she is the most empathetic, I feel, of the characters. And she's probably like the best commander.
She also has the best survival rate.
That is true, too.
Like once you get past caretaker.
She has a good record. But I feel like Captain Picard, and I also feel like if I were in a turbo lift with Captain Picard, I would be very uncomfortable because I wouldn't want him to notice me. Because I feel like he'd ask me what I was doing, and then I'd get flustered, and then I'd like hit the emergency stop and try to run away.
I think that Captain Picard is introverted,
mm-hmm.
In the sense that he's a very good leader, but he's not super big on social functions. But when he lets in his senior staff, he forms real bonds with them. Like, and you see that progression throughout the 7 seasons of TNG. Because everybody's really stiff and they don't really interact in a friendly manner at the very beginning of the show. And by that final scene around the poker table, I mean, that's a family right there.
That's true. Spoiler alert for the final F scene of TNG.
They play poker. Ooh, come on.
No, it was a joke. It's a joke. If you're listening to this, chances are you have seen the final episode of TNG, so I'm not too concerned. Also, they all make it. Yeah, and this episode also shows that, right? Because it starts on the holodeck with Data performing some Shakespeare. And, of course, he's performing it for Captain Picard. Because who else on the ship would you perform a Shakespeare scene for but one of the best Shakespearean actors of our time? Also, Captain Picard. And he gives him some good stage direction in that he needs to have a little more light so people could see him.
Brent is also doing his very best Patrick impression in this scene.
It is true.
It's pretty close.
But it's always interesting to see, and obviously they're on a holodeck, so you think, oh boy, this is going to be a holodeck episode. And in fact, it is a holodeck episode. So what do you feel? What are your thoughts on holodeck episodes?
I love a good holodeck malfunction.
I feel like there's no reason there should be holodecks on starships, but they are quite amusing.
I mean, it's what I meant, really, when I said I buy into the campiness of this show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's going to be a holodeck malfunction. It's going to be ridiculous.
Yes, and it is quite ridiculous, this episode. So basically, what happens in a nutshell, and I guess we could just jump around, because this is one of these episodes that I don't think is bad, but it wasn't super interesting. I mean, the concept is interesting, but the episode itself kind of left me a little cold. Is that the Enterprise is spontaneously emerging as an intelligence, and it is messing around with the holodeck and joining systems that are unjoined so that it can birth itself, I guess, and fly off into space and live its life free of the shackles of the Enterprise, I guess. And spoiler alert, it does in the end fly off in space, and nobody knows what happens to it. So it's kind of a strange episode, a very tropey episode in that, you know, a complex system evolving into an artificial intelligence is a sci-fi trope. Holodeck malfunctions, Star Trek trope. I was reading on Memory Alpha that basically they wanted one last holodeck episode, and they wanted to smash together all the holodeck episodes they ever had into a crazy, kooky holodeck episode, and this is what we got.
I mean, they accomplished their goal.
They did. Check mark next to that, because it is a crazy, kooky holodeck episode.
I do think that it is a little bit weird where it falls. You know, as you said, introducing it, there's preemptive strike after this, which basically, if you think about it, sets up Voyager, right? Because you've got the whole Maquis storyline.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Going on, and adds some more to DS9. And then All Good Things. And there's this goofy holodeck episode right at the end. I probably would have put it a bit earlier in the season, but I'm not a showrunner.
Yeah, I don't quite understand. I mean, I think it's a fine episode, but it just is so weird that it's one of the last episodes of TNG, because it's just like, okay.
Yes.
That's... And
the thing that just blows my mind is how many times has this spaceship, like, spawned life?
It's been a very busy spaceship.
At least twice, because the one that immediately comes to mind is Moriarty,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, nobody seems concerned by this.
After Moriarty, this is what I'm saying. After Moriarty, they created Moriarty right by Data basically saying, or Geordi saying to the computer, create an opponent that can beat Data, and the computer creates a sentient being that is, you know, smart enough to defeat Data. Creating life. And after that, nobody thinks, maybe we should turn off the holodecks.
That whole episode, they're going, this is a problem we have to fix. And not a single person is like, how did this happen?
This is fascinating. No, nobody cares. They're just like, whatever. Captain Picard's like, I need to play my next chapter of Dixon Hill.
Yes.
So we are not telling anybody about this, because the holodecks are going to continue to work.
Or maybe in his head, he's like, Dixon Hill might come to life.
Oh, that's right.
Well, he's
right.
Dixon Hill, so one of the other people.
That might be his ultimate fan moment. Right. And what we don't see is he's like, you know, create someone who is capable of beating Jean-Luc Picard.
And then he'd be really sad if the computer didn't create life.
That's true. I'd be like, why? You did it for Geordi. Why not for me? Yeah, and so this is, so it's interesting, right? So they find these nodes that basically look like crazy straws all throughout the Enterprise, and they have to figure out what's going on. And it's never really explained how these nodes have come into being, except Data says, well, the computer's complex, so it probably just has done it. And everybody's like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's hooked into the replicator, right? So I guess it could replicate itself.
Yes. And it does. I mean, there's a point at which it's building something in a cargo bay. And Geordi's like, oh, somehow it's connected the replicators and the transporters. And he says it in such a way that's like, that has never occurred to anyone. When I always thought that the transporters and replicators are basically the same technology.
Pretty much, yeah.
So I don't know why Geordi is so impressed with this. But, I mean, it's impressive that it's creating this thing, but the method it's using seems like a logical way to do it if you are a ship. But I'm not a chief engineer, so I should not distrust Geordi.
Well, and at the very beginning, too, when the ship moves them out of the way of something else that'll kill them. Mm-hmm. And he's like, but there's no direct link between the sensors and the warp engine. Well, why not? That seems like it would be a really good idea.
Yeah, and it's not like you could say, well, maybe it's for security purposes. Because security in Next Generation and every Star Trek series is abysmal. So it's not like they have any particular, like they're not hardening the systems and isolating them because like everyone's passwords are like 3 characters long and you could take over ships remotely.
Right.
What I'm saying is they have bad cybersecurity people. But this is not a cyber... Well, I guess it is actually a cybersecurity threat because it's basically like a sentient virus that occurs. Like, they never really explain what happens. It's just... Because at first you think, oh, the computer is gaining sentience. And that's kind of cool. Because then they'll have to, you know, negotiate with the computer. And then is the Enterprise a life form? And that would, of course, derail the next 2 episodes, so they couldn't really do that. And it turns into, well, no, I guess the Enterprise is sentient, but then it transfers this sentience into this thing it's creating and leaves. It's very confusing.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, almost interesting, but then they do this shortcut, because obviously they can't just have the Enterprise become a sentient being in one of the final episodes of the last season of the show. That would throw off a lot of people.
Well, and the conclusion is like, well, that was weird. Okay, what's next?
Like, yep, it was...
Data mentions that it's risky that he let the computer play out its mission. But, like, how do they know the computer's not going to do it again?
Well, that's my thought. Shouldn't they, like, immediately contact every starship in Starfleet and say, you better check for these wacky nodes in various places because our computer core has gained sentience and there's nothing, it's the same hardware as everybody else is running. So you better check to make sure that you don't have this alien life form, or I guess it's not really alien life form, growing. But yeah, I mean, this episode has it's so frustrating when you watch a Star Trek episode that has so much potential to ask interesting questions, and they get to the precipice of the interesting question, and then they just move along to a train.
Maybe Geordi just didn't upgrade the iOS.
And he didn't. Yeah. And then that's why you should always keep your iPhones up to date, people. You never know when it might just beam away under its own volition. And so I guess the centerpiece of this episode is we see at the very beginning when, you know, Data's being Prospero and Captain Picard's telling him about, you know, proper lighting. And then they see in the distance some lights are approaching. And Picard's like, what is that, Data? And Data's like, I don't know what that is. And it turns out it's a train, which seems odd because there is no train on Prospero's island. And they both stand in front of it for a really long time, thinking, that's odd that a train is approaching us, don't you think, Data? And Data's like, yes, that's very odd, Captain. and then they decide we should get out of the way of this train. And this train is a metaphor for the ship itself. It's the ship's intelligence is interacting with the holodeck and creating this train that's full of people that are from other holodeck programs, in which to be a metaphor for its struggles to take over the Enterprise or something.
Yeah, and each of the characters is meant to represent a different system, I guess.
I guess.
Right? Because, like, there's the engineer, and there's somebody else who's security, and, yeah.
There's the conductor, the engineer, a gangster, because if you're going to have a holodeck episode, you might as well have a gangster. A flapper who's, I guess, putting together a puzzle with the hayseed. I don't know who the hayseed is. And there's a guy in armor with paper dolls.
Uh-huh.
And there might be some other people. Oh, there's a cowboy, like a villain, because he has a black hat.
Right, from Fistful of Datas, probably.
Probably. The gangster shoots the train engineer. And I thought, oh, maybe this is, because we know that this is representing this emergent intelligence. I thought perhaps this is the story. I've seen this episode before because I knew it was going to happen, but I thought, well, maybe it'll be interesting if these are different facets of that intelligence and it's arguing with itself over what it should do. But not really. That's not seeming to be the story that they tell. It's unclear to me why he shoots him.
He shoots him. The explanation is that he shoots him because he's trying to protect the crew.
And he needs the brick to put in this wall.
Right, to lay the foundation or something.
Yeah,
it doesn't make a ton of sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all, really.
But you do get the scene with the flapper just like banging a wine glass up against the knight in shining armor. And it's hilarious.
It has some very surreal scenes. And the train set itself is very nice, so I see why they spent so much time on it, because they wanted to show it off. And Deanna Troi gets called in, because people are like, well, this is kind of like a dream, maybe. So Deanna can interpret it for us, maybe.
She makes that offer, doesn't she?
I think she does.
Yeah.
They give her something to do. And so she jumps on the ship, not the ship, the train, and tries to figure it out. And that's, she comes to the conclusion that the different characters are different systems, perhaps, and maybe the cowboy is weapons or something. It doesn't really matter, because Captain Picard has already decided that since it's an emerging intelligence, they need to help it, which makes sense. It's a very kind of Star Trek-y thing to do. You want to help this emerging thing. You don't want to just destroy it because you don't understand it. The ship needs to get somewhere. It needs to go to what? Vertitron City or something?
Vertiform.
Like that? Vertiform City.
Vertiform City.
That's right. And they get to Vertiform City. It turns out it's a star that they need to suck Vertitrons, Vertitrinos.
Vertrion.
Vertrions. Some made up Star Trek particle that we've never heard of.
There's good eating in Vertiform City.
That's right. They've got that restaurant. You can eat all you want. It's open any time of the day.
I'm sorry.
This episode,
so ridiculous.
It's completely ridiculous. And it's interesting. It's one of those Star Trek episodes that has no B plot. It's all A plot, and the A plot is ridiculous. And I thought this could really use a B plot. But
I thought it was going to have a related B plot at one point. Like the very first time through, I remember like, oh, we're going to learn more at the very end of the show about our main characters by finding out how they like to spend their free time.
Mm-hmm.
Like I thought we might get more about like why Dr. Crusher likes the Orient Express.
Sure.
Right. But like it turned out we just got that one flirty scene, which is fine.
That is a good scene.
There could have been more. Like there could have been a revisit of Fistful of Datas. And there could have been more about Prospero's Island. About
yes,
like
they could
why
have had...
is the train going through, you know, there's Ariel outside.
Yes. Right? And they could have had good old Reg Barkley on. He's a holodeck addict.
Right? He's an expert. Where is he?
Yes, what's he doing? This is a perfect time to show him. But they don't. I don't understand this episode, really. I imagine I was going to say maybe it is budgetary constraints, but they built the train set so they get everyone on the train.
Did they definitely build the train set? They didn't, like, get a hand-me-down.
Well, I have no idea if they built it or not, but they had the train set, let's say. They found it somewhere on the lot. And they just needed a bunch of costumes, which they got, one assumes, on the lot as well, because there's a cowboy and a knight, and these are kind of your default Hollywood characters.
Just went through a storage closet.
Exactly. They could have had, like, a Klingon warrior. Come on.
Like trying to cut up everybody else.
Exactly.
From one of Worf's calisthenics programs.
That would have been awesome.
Nobody's playing Parisi Squares.
So many missed opportunities in this episode. And this could have been, it's like one of the final episodes, so it could have been total fan service. Here's all the holodeck stuff that you remember from the other six seasons. And maybe they tried to do that. I did read on Memory Alpha that's the first script was they read it and they were like, this is impossible for us to shoot in the time allotted, so they simplified it a lot, so they may have taken out a lot of the fun holodeck stuff.
I would love to read that first script.
Me too, because I feel like I said before, this episode has a lot of potential, but it doesn't deliver a lot of anything, really. Not being all overly harsh. I mean, it's a fun episode, but it's kind of inconsequential. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm being overly harsh just because, as I've said like 1,000 times already, it is one of the last episodes of TNG. So,
are you grading it more harshly because it's so late in the season?
I think I am.
If this were like a season 5 episode,
I think I would.
Would you like it a lot more?
Much more forgiving of it, just because. Can you imagine? I mean, obviously this must have happened because I was watching TNG as it was airing in syndication, and so I don't remember, but I can imagine watching this and thinking, "This is one of the last episodes. Nothing has happened."
Yeah, but I don't think that's true, right? Because all TV was still episodic.
It's true.
There was no big story arc they were trying to wrap up. They were just trying to fill an hour of television.
It's true.
Right? So, if you get to the end of DS9, and this was the third to last episode of Deep Space Nine, that'd be a problem.
Let's see what Vic Fontaine's up to. No. And I think they actually did that. So, Deep Space Nine. You're right. The episodic nature of TNG makes this make a little more sense, but I still think...
The last episode of TOS is Turnabout Intruder.
Well, it's true.
And that makes me want to set things on fire.
Well, I will say for this episode, it did not make me want to set anything on fire. It did not... It made me want to go on a train, so I guess that's good. I like trains. I apparently share that with Dr. Crusher, although she doesn't like trains themselves. She likes the experience of being on the Orient Express.
She doesn't have the experience of being on the subway, so.
Different kind of train. That's not as romantic as the Orient Express.
Not nearly.
I did like that where Captain Picard is like, I had no idea you like trains. And he's like rattling off some factoids about the Orient Express. And she's like, ugh, Jean-Luc, I don't like the train. I like the experience of being on the train. And he's like, oh.
He's such a dork.
And I do always find it so funny that Captain Picard, Shakespeare is a big deal. So, and he's still like 400 years ago, Shakespeare wrote stuff. 400 years later, he's a big deal. 400 years in the future, I imagine he will continue to be a big deal. But the Orient Express is like, I don't know if most people 400 years hence will know what the Orient Express is. But everybody on the Enterprise seems to know what it is.
Transportation nerds probably will.
I guess that's true.
Like and, Tom Paris.
That's right. But he's always in his garage tinkering with his whatever muscle car or whatever it is. So
whatever's in the public domain.
That's right. So do you have any favorite scenes from this episode that we could talk about? Because there's really not a lot of plot.
No. I really do like the opening scene. Mm. And, you know, whenever we see Picard talking Shakespeare is amusing, you know, and it's a little bit meta. Mm-hmm. And then the train lets you know what you're in for.
And I like that they bookend it with the final scene is Data and Picard once again talking about Shakespeare. And mm-hmm. you know, ending with a Shakespeare quote. So that's all nice.
Yeah, and when Picard gives that speech about he's a man who's seeing his usefulness, so you're like, okay, here we go. This is what we got to be paying attention for. But I remember the first time through watching it, I really liked the end where like the giant node rises up out of the cargo bay and goes flying off. Like, I guess that, you know, this would have been 94. So like 12-year-old me found that really inspirational.
And I couldn't tell if it was flying towards the camera or it was getting bigger. Or both.
Yeah. There were some CGI problems.
So I don't understand if it was rapidly expanding and moving or just moving and coming because it's close to the camera.
You can also tell that the group of them that were gathered around it aren't all looking in the same place as it starts flying up.
Yes. And I love the fact they're all around it and it starts moving and Geordi's like, Captain, as if alerting him. Jean-Luc is standing right there. He can see what's happening, Geordi.
Oh, it's so goofy.
And I will say, I did like one, so, well, you know, the whole thing, it has this goofy thing, but I really like Worf is one of my favorite characters. And they like putting Worf.
Worf is so great in this.
Yes, because he's like, I like when Deanna and Worf are, you know, investigating and they decide, okay, we're going to help them. So we have to help in whatever way. And the conductor's like, well, I could use some help shoveling coal into the engine. And Deanna's like, Worf? That
His
sounds like a job for you.
Is so great. Yes.
And I was watching it with my wife, and she turned to me and she said, he reacted just the way you do when someone wants you to do something physical. And then I gave her a side eye, and everybody laughed. And then him kind of getting annoyed when he's actually shoveling stuff. Worf, you're a treasure. Never change. there's not a lot of meat in this episode. Dr. Crusher gets to bandage up two people because Captain Picard gets injured and Deanna gets injured. Data gets to hold up a taxi.
Sorry, I'm laughing at the styrofoam bricks that fall on her. Like, it's very Ghostbusters. I expect them to bounce.
Yes, that is, she does have a brick wall that falls on her.
Actually, Data holding up the cab is a pretty funny scene.
It is funny. Yes, he's like, there was a problem, but I've solved it. And that made me think, I know that logic does not apply to this episode, but they're in the holodeck. The life form is controlling the holodeck, so can it just create another taxi? Keep creating taxis?
It wouldn't be as funny, I guess.
It would not be as funny, and it would cost more money. So these are the answers that we get.
Oh.
Yeah, and so he... And I did think I liked how... Well, I didn't like this, but it takes them... They're really smart people, but it takes them a while to figure out that the things that are happening in the holodeck are mirroring the things that are happening on the ship.
It turned around at almost exactly the same time.
What does it mean? I don't know. And I was like, oh, come on. Everybody knows what that means.
Yet they also seem totally oblivious to the fact that the puzzle the characters are building looks exactly like those nodes.
Yeah, that was like, what is
it? Come on.
You all saw the nodes, right? They look exactly like that. People on Star Trek, come on. And Dr. Crusher doesn't do much in this episode. Deanna doesn't... Well, I guess Deanna has more to do because she goes and she helps people figure out stuff. Riker looks at stuff and frowns a lot.
He might actually have the least to do in this episode.
Yeah, he barges. He doesn't barge in. He goes onto the train for the first time, looks around, says, "We got to get out of here," and they leave. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this episode. So.
I think it's fun.
Well,
and
it
silly.
Is fun. It is silly, and I think that you're right. I'm just judging it harshly because it's a late season 7 episode.
You want it to be more epic than it is.
Yes. I do. Well, let me ask you this. What did you think of All Good Things, the final, the season series finale of TNG?
I think that All Good Things is the, I'm trying to find the right word, most appropriate season finale of all time. And I pick those words because I don't think it is by quality the best season finale of any show ever of all time. That might be MASH, but I do think that it is the epitome of the show that it is wrapping up.
I agree 100%. And I love All Good Things just because it is just like they took everything TNGE and just slammed it into those last two episodes. And they were just like, here, this is how we're ending it. It ends in a hopeful way, like you were talking about earlier. We get spatial anomalies and Q, and we get to see alternate realities. It's fantastic. Captain Picard and Dr. Crusher get married and divorced, but you know, still, it's all great.
I have theories. I won't go into them.
Oh, I'm intrigued about these theories.
I could talk about that for like days. You really don't want me to talk about it.
All right. Well, then let's. We have a couple more minutes. I think we both agree. Emergence is fun, but perhaps it suffers by its placement in the seventh season.
Yeah, it is unfortunately not anything special.
No. But let's talk about, I have one last question that I was going to ask you, but we got carried away in the beginning. Oh. Favorite Star Trek character, period.
Beverly Crusher.
Oh, look at that. Once again, no hesitation. I like it. What about Beverly Crusher?
I think I go to that nostalgia and young influence well in that, you know, she is a mother, a single mother at that, mm-hmm. and a scientist and at the top of her field, and also has the ability to pull rank on the captain. She's the only person on the ship who can do that. And, like, does not take anybody's crap. At all, ever. She is the first one to call somebody on their garbage, and she'll have it out with just about anybody if she thinks or believes in what she's fighting for.
And she may have the best line in all of Star Trek when she says, "There's nothing wrong with me, so there must be something wrong with the universe."
It is a pretty great line.
Bar none.
I don't know if it beats "Get the cheese to sick bay."
Well, that's pretty good.
That's a pretty great line.
Dr. Pulaski. What do you think of Dr. Pulaski?
I appreciate Dr. Pulaski. I think Diana Muldar is a fantastic actress. I think that the writers did a disservice to the character, especially by trying to bring her in as the McCoy to Data Spock, because it is not the same dynamic. Because Spock would bite back, and Data didn't have that ability. So right. They made Pulaski punch down.
Yes, and she was just being mean. And you're like, yes. Why are you picking on Data?
But I will tell you, if you go back and watch season two, especially if you do it in a relatively short time frame, you see her change. And she goes from those scenes where she's calling Data it and questioning his own autonomy to defending him. And one thing I really wish had happened is that because you see her defending him in later episodes, I truly wish that we had seen her testify in Measure of a Man. That's the one thing that episode is missing. If she went in there and was like, "I started out feeling the same way that you did. Let me tell you why you're wrong."
Mm-hmm. That would have been a very nice way of showing their growth in the relationship. Mm-hmm. But they didn't do it, sadly.
No.
Well, Sue, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.